Welcome to Real Money Radio, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. Here's your host, certified financial planner, David Holland.
All right. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Glad you're with me. We have got some great stuff lined up for you. Yeah, maybe I say that all the time, but the truth is, it is really good stuff. I hope you enjoy it. And we go out and we find, we've got some good people here in my office helping me do that. And we are looking for interesting guests that can bring you things that are relevant and timely and useful to you. And today's program is no exception to that. Morgan Housel is on the line with me, and he is a columnist at The Motley Fool and The Wall Street Journal. So you can go to WSJ.com and or www.fool.com. I don't know if I want to admit that I would go to a website called fool.com, but that's where there's a lot of good information and how not to be a fool with your investments. A couple of great articles we ran across that Morgan wrote, and we're going to get some thoughts from him. Morgan comes to us, of course, with his being featured not only with Motley Fool and Wall Street Journal, also has been featured in USA Today, the Huffington Post, and Business Insider, two-time winner of the Best in Business Award from the Society of American Business Editors and Writers. And he is a big deal in what he does. So we're very glad and happy to welcome Morgan. Morgan, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Anytime you need me to introduce you, let me know. All right. Well, you've earned it. And I want to say thank you for what you're doing. I applaud good writing, and I know good writing when I see it. And I was struck by your article about it, because it seems so timely, and I'm sure you meant it as such, how investors sabotage their own performance. And we've got what the markets have been doing, and we've got a lot of things that have happened. And it is very interesting when you peel back the onion to see what's really happening with the economy and what expectations are and how professional money managers do what they do, and how the individual investor always seems to kind of shoot themselves in the foot when they are bombarded by these different things that are happening in the marketplace.
That's right. You know, I think finance and investing in general is really taught as a math-based subject. That's how it's taught in schools. Taught almost like something like physics, where you take your data and you have your formulas, and you put your data into the formulas, and it gives you a nice, clean, predictable answer. That's often how finance is taught. But I think in the real world, finance is something much different. It's much softer. It's much more something like psychology or sociology or history, where what separates the good investors from the bad investors, I think, is overwhelmingly, 9 times out of 10, it is the good investors have control over their emotions and their behavior. And the bad investors, even if they are brilliant and have PhDs in physics or whatnot, if they don't have control over their emotions, they're not going to be a good investor over the long run. And we've seen this time and time again. And you know, it's really interesting now. We had a very bad bear market, 2008, 2009, of course. And a lot of investors were kind of panicked and spooked out of the market. And now we've had this 6-year bull market where stocks have nearly tripled
right.
since 2009.
Right.
And here comes optimism. And it's sad, but at the same time, it's very predictable, too, that investors would get scared out at the bottom and want to come back in at the top. And if you repeat that cycle over the lifetime throughout your lifetime as an investor, you're going to get terrible results if you're going to get scared out the bottom and come back in time. And that's effectively what we see among the average individual investor over their lifetime, is pretty terrible results.
Well, I know you know the running joke, Morgan, in investment community, which we'll let our listeners in on, is that, you know, the average investor is almost always wrong in terms of when they're going to buy and when they're going to sell.
Yeah, that's effectively true. And I think one of the big points about this topic is that nobody wants to admit that this behavior is something that they fall for themselves. Whenever people talk about this, how bad the individual investor is in general, bad investment behavior, they're always talking about someone else's thing. No one wants to admit that this affects themselves. But you know, there's a famous Warren Buffett quote, "Be greedy when others are fearful, and fearful when others are greedy."
Yeah.
And people love that quote, and they like repeating it, and they want to think that they themselves can engage in that behavior. But it is so much easier to say that you will be greedy when others are fearful than it is to actually do it. And I think a lot of investors that think of themselves as contrarian thinkers, once 2008 rolls around, or when 2014 rolls around, when things are getting really well, or when things are going really well, they realize that they are the others that Warren Buffett was thinking about, that they are susceptible to that herd behavior just like everyone else. And it's sort of this paradox of, in my experience, it seems that about 90% of people think they are contrarian. Maybe more than that. Maybe 95% of people think they
are
contrarian.
Isn't that interesting? What a statistic.
And of course, mathematically, they can't
be, right?
To admit, though, I am the average investor and I fall for herd behavior. Nobody will say that, but most of the time it's true.
That's very funny. Well, and you know, it doesn't, and I got a couple of things I'll comment and I get your feedback on. All we have to do is look at where we were after, you know, toward the end of 2014 and going into 2015. And then we saw a little bit, technically not even a pullback, but just, you know, a few percentage points for the market, and people started getting a little bit anxious and started to, you know, to come out of the market. And then almost with a vengeance, the market comes roaring back, which is the headline. And part of the challenge, I know you are very aware of this, Morgan, but something that drives me absolutely bonkers, and I don't think helps some of this psychology part of the investing, which I agree 150% with you on that, is the headlines. And I know that newspapers and television and all these folks need to sell papers and sell TV ads, and I see it on Yahoo, and I see it on the financial, websites. The headlines will say market plunges 300 points. Well, when the Dow was 5,000 point Dow, a 300 point drop would be significant. But at 17,000, 18,000 Dow, it's 1-2%. It's not a plunge. Am I wrong to be not only find a problem with that, but be annoyed by it?
No, I think you're absolutely right, and I would actually take it one step further and say even when the Dow was at 5,000, a 300-point drop was a much bigger percentage drop than it is today. But even back then, you know, if you look at the long-term history of the stock market, going back to 1928, this is before the Great Depression, there's been a 10% correction in the S&P 500 on average every 10 and a half months. There's been a 20% correction on average about every 3 or 4 years, and a 30% correction on average about once a decade. That's the long-term history of the stock market. And during that time, markets, when you include dividends, increased 2,000-fold from that period in 1928 through 2014. That's with dividends. Volatility in the market is incredibly normal, but whenever it occurs, the media and investors themselves, I think, have this tendency to think that something is wrong or something is broken, or, you know, this is something that needs our attention. When in reality, the reason that you're able to earn a good superior return in the stock market over the long run is specifically because stocks are volatile in the short run. That's the cost of admission
you have to pay
to earn the long-term return.
Well,
you're absolutely right that it's often portrayed as something that is dangerous or headline-grabbing or that needs your attention, but it's really just par for the course.
Well, what really is interesting to me, Morgan, you spoke about it being, something, the market's broken or something's wrong. My favorite one is it's different this time.
Yeah, I think that's true. It's often portrayed like this 10% correction, like this is going to be the big one. It's
right.
Like people are talking about earthquakes, like when's the big one going to hit Los Angeles?
Right.
And it's kind of the same in the markets. You have a 3% correction or, a 3% pullback, 5% pullback, and then you just start extrapolating that those returns into the future. You know, is this going to be the big one that comes? And it almost rarely is. But what's also dangerous, I think, about the term, it's different this time.
Right.
There are a lot of people that will mention that phrase in a ridiculing way, that those are the words that people always want to use to think that it's different this time. So I think that there's a truth about markets, too, is that it is always different this time. And I think it's dangerous sometimes when there are people that want to look at the past and assume that the future is going to resemble it perfectly. And there are a lot of people right now that say, okay, 2015, what year is that? What year is 2015 similar to? Is this 1999?
Right.
Is this 1929? Is this 1987? Well, the truth is, no, it's 2015, and it's not going to resemble any of those years.
Right.
It's always different this time.
Well,
the point taken that there's a tendency in markets to think that it's broken and that's going to be this time, but we also have to be aware that it's pretty much always different this time.
Well, and what's the same about 2015 versus another year? What's the same about it is it's going to be different too.
That's right. In 1999, there was no other year similar to that. prior to 1990. It's different every single year. But, you know, people and investors who are really after trying to figure out what the future holds, they want to look for patterns.
Right.
And they want to believe that it's simple to say, oh, this is 1999. That's a simple way to think about it, and it feels good to think about it, because it gives us perception that the future is clean and predictable.
It's a shortcut.
That we can just, you know, take one year and plug it into another, and that's going to give us the answer.
Yeah, it's a shortcut.
But really, what history over time and what moves markets over time are these very specific granular events that won't be repeated in the future, whether that's Lehman Brothers going bankrupt in 2008 or, you know, World Wars in 1941, Pearl Harbor, whatnot. There's very specific events that really move history that you should not expect to repeat themselves over time. So you should always expect volatility. You should always expect surprises. But when we're trying to compare one year to the next, that gets dangerous.
Very dangerous indeed. Well, listen, Morgan, we're glad to have you here to help us dissect it. I want to take a quick break. We'll come back and talk with Morgan Housel further about this investor sabotaging and some of the specific effects or ways this happens, so you can be on guard yourselves, ladies and gentlemen. And of course, it's those other people that do this, not you. Hold right there. We'll be right back.
Where can you find more spin than in politics? If you said financial services, you'd be correct. Ask a stockbroker how you should invest your money, and what do you think he'll say? Ask an insurance agent the same question, and what do you think you'll hear? Unfortunately, when an advisor is limited in what he can offer, he is often understandably biased. You'll need to ask questions. Ask advisors what products and services they can and can't offer. Ask about their licensing and credentials. Remain skeptical. This public service has been brought to you by Holland Financial. We want to help you plan stronger. For more information, call 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Morgan Housel on the line with me, columnist at The Motley Fool and The Wall Street Journal. You can go to WSJ.com or Fool.com and learn more about what Morgan's sharing with us. And we're talking a little bit about investor behavior and sabotaging their own performance. And we've talked to, you know, about some different subjects. And I wanted to get a little bit into some of these actual specific things that we see. And I wanted to ask Morgan about them. One of the ones that I know is that you've talked about, Morgan, which I think is very interesting, how people view different money in different ways in terms of what they're willing to risk or what they're willing to do with that money. I think you term it, or it's been termed, the house money effect.
That's right. You know, there's this tendency, I think, after the market has done well, as it has over the last 5 years, to look at money differently. You know, there's money that you earned at work, and that's your principal that you put into the market, and then there's money that you earned from returns in the market. And it's really tempting for investors to separate those two and say, look, at money that I've earned in the market is somehow different than money that I earned at work. And they're willing to take more risk with money that they earned in the market. And it's just like a gambler at a table. Maybe he's playing blackjack, and he's had a good run. He's done well on the last few hands, and he's made this money. And he considers that the house money, because it's more money than he came to the table with. So he's willing to take more risk with that money. And, you know, this might make sense. There might be some logic to that. But if we're really looking at this rationally in terms of what money is, like $1 is $1. It doesn't matter where it came from. It really makes no sense. And I think that's part of why investors at the top of a bull market start taking these crazy risks with their money.
Yeah,
they start getting just kind of flagrant with their risk taking, because they view this money that they've made in the market as sort of play money. That gets dangerous too. So there was this financial advisor that I interviewed. He had a client who had done incredibly well on one stock, so much that this one stock made up more than 50% of his portfolio. And it was nearly impossible for this financial advisor to tell his client that he needed to sell some of the stock to diversify, because the client just viewed so much of this money as house money and almost didn't mind the risk that he could lose so much money on this one stock, because he's like, you know, I started with a little bit of money and now it's a lot, so if I lose some of it, hey, big deal, I still come out ahead. And that's a dangerous mind frame that I think investors have, and it becomes especially dangerous as we enter the late stages of a bull market as we are now.
Well, Morgan, when you mentioned the blackjack analogy, what occurred to me is that it's only house money until you stand up. I mean, as you stand up, it's in your pocket. It's no longer house money. But I think that is definitely part of, I've seen that with investors and folks that I talk to, that, you know, that's just part of the psychology. And this is where, of course, in what I do working with people and providing them advice, is I don't have any in my mind. If they come in to meet with me and I look at their portfolio and it's, you know, it's $300,000, I'm not separating what they've made in gains and what they put into it, or all of these different ways you might attribute where that money came from. As far as I'm concerned, $300,000 is $300,000, $300,000. What do you want from that money? Let's talk about your risk tolerance. Let's talk about what you need. Let's talk about these things. And that's real money to make income from, if that's the person's situation. So people need to be real realistic about that.
Yeah, I mean, money is money. And I think what that really highlights is that money is very emotional.
Yes.
And we want to think that we can think about it rationally, and that money are just, it's numbers in the bank, and we're going to make good decisions with our investments. But money is a very psychological topic. And it messes with our brains, I think, more than people realize, more than they want to admit.
Yeah.
So, you know, that idea, the house money concept, is just a good example of that.
Well, and that's related to this other, using the casino or blackjack or gambling analogy. The next one that I know that you've spoken to is this backfire effect, where people will double down on their beliefs because they're invested, literally and figuratively, in that position.
Yeah, you know, this is really common in politics, where there are a lot of really high tense debates about different candidates and different parties. So what the backfiring effect is in politics is that if someone hears their preferred candidate being attacked by the other side with negative information about this person's character, the candidate's background, what they believe, with negative information, that person will view their preferred candidate in a more preferred, beneficial light. They'll feel better about their candidate when they're attacked by the other side.
Isn't that funny?
They double down on their beliefs when they're confronted with conflicting information. And I think that happens in investing debates, too. This is true for investors who are really active. You see this a lot on investing blogs or on TV, especially if you're watching financial TV, that you see these debates between investors, you know, whether gold is going to be a great investment or whether we're going to have hyperinflation or deflation, these really sort of these topics that get very heated and emotional. And it's really the same. Once people are confronted with conflicting information about their viewpoint, they get more fanatical about their existing viewpoint. I think you see this in individual stocks when a short seller comes out attacking a company. You know, it's a big hedge fund, or it's Bill Ackman comes out,
right,
and he's shorting their stock. The shareholders of that company that's being attacked become very defensive when they are confronted with that conflicting information. Even if the short seller ultimately becomes right, and they often are, the shareholders get very defensive. And that, too, to go back to what we were talking about earlier, is, I think, a good example of money is a psychological game. And it's very easy to detach yourself from reality and just sort of get into this snowballing effect of different emotions that are affecting how you think about money and your investments. And it goes back to what I was talking about earlier, in that the best investors over time are the ones that have control over their emotions and their behaviors. It's not necessarily the people that have the PhDs in finance and who can calculate beta in their head. It's the people that really have control over their emotions.
Fair enough. And I think that next, this flows into the other bias that we see people have in the political analogies. And an excellent one, Morgan, because we see this all the time, is the confirmation bias, where the investor and, of course, the political disciple is going to look for things that only confirm their already preconceived position, which is why they sometimes call the various television channels or news stations echo chambers, because that's why they're popular, and it's why people tune in, because they get to hear what they already believe.
Yeah, I think most people, when they go out and they seek an expert for their opinion, I think they want to believe that they're looking for information, but more often they're looking for confirmation.
Right.
They have an idea of how the world works, and they just want someone who has a good credential and is wearing a nice suit and sounds professional. They want someone to confirm that view. And I think, you know, in the last 20 years, there's been an explosion in the amount of media out there, whether it's 24-hour news or it's Twitter or the explosion of financial blogs. that in general has been a good trend. It's good that we have more information, more opinions out there. But it also makes it so that no matter what you believe about investing or politics or basically anything, no matter what your belief is, you can go out and find someone who agrees with you.
Sure.
And when you find someone who agrees with you, it makes you more confident that you are right to begin with. Because you say, look, I have this view about this stock or about inflation or about interest rates. And hey, look, this guy agrees with me. And this other guy agrees with me. And then you feel better about yourself.
It's amazing.
But what's dangerous about it is, like I said, you can find basically any view you want these days. So it's really important to understand, I think, the incentive and the track record of the people that you get your information
from. There you
with.
Go. There
and
you
to
go.
Be honest with yourself about what you're doing when you're looking for information. And, you know, what I think something I mentioned in that article was Charles Darwin. I had this reputation for his life goal was to basically prove himself wrong. And as a scientist, that's what he was trying to do day after day, was disprove his own belief. And that is, I think, something that investors can learn from. That should really be your goal when you go out there to try to understand what's happening in the market, what's happening with this individual stock, or just how you think about finance, to try to disprove your own beliefs. That's how you're going to get to the truth much faster than if you go out and try to confirm your beliefs through others.
Yeah, with 7 billion potential confirmations on the planet, I think we need to be a little more honest with our process. Morgan Housel, ladies and gentlemen, No Fool at All, The Motley Fool and The Wall Street Journal columnist. And we're going to grab a quick break. We'll be right back with Morgan. Stay right there.
Have you considered an annuity as part of your retirement plan? Did you know that over the past 10 years, Americans put a staggering $2.3 trillion into annuities? Despite their popularity, many people are unsure about annuities. Why? Because annuities have been attacked for decades by financial folks who offer competing products or services. A lot of money is at stake. So you can imagine that financial firms who only offer investments don't want you to consider an annuity. Get the facts. Call Holland Financial to get your free copy of Annuities as Part of Your Retirement Plan. This booklet provides a plain English explanation of the different types of annuities, as well as straightforward information about their costs, features, safety, and income potential. To get your free copy, call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com. Do you have financial questions you'd like answered on this show? Send them to questions@planstronger.com. You will remain anonymous.
All right, welcome back. Morgan Housel on the line with me, columnist at The Motley Fool and The Wall Street Journal, WSJ.com and www.fool.com. And I tell you what, great stuff from Morgan on some of these different biases that those other folks have, not you ladies and gentlemen, about how they approach their investing. And it's just very good to have this perspective. There's three more I want to get to real quick, Morgan, if we can. The anchoring bias, the recency bias, and the blind spot bias. And let's start with the anchoring bias. This is where people hold on to stuff that's kind of irrelevant, that somehow attributes a value to what they're doing as kind of a benchmark or some way to hold on to what they really want to believe. Like, for example, with housing prices and looking at an old, original appraisal or what you paid for it and using that as an anchor.
Yeah, you know, that's really true with investing, whether it's in a house or a stock or whatnot, is that it's very tempting to think that the price that you paid for a house or a stock is a fair price, because that's why you bought it, because you consider it a fair price or even a good price.
I could have been wrong.
Right, but no one wants to admit that. No one wants to believe. No, it's hard to admit that the market doesn't care what you paid for your stock. They don't care if you paid $100 for your Apple shares. But you as an investor do, and you think, look, when I made this purchase, when I bought Apple stock for $100, that was a good decision because I made that decision. So it must have been good. And then if Apple stock falls to 90, you think, well, that's not fair. I paid $100 for it, now it's a fair price, and now it's 90, and that's not fair. But no one cares what you paid for your stock except for you. So it's really important to sort of detach yourself from that. But it's extremely difficult to do that, to separate yourself from those numbers that you are anchoring from what's going on in reality today.
Well, and on that same point, and speaking to things that are more recent, the recency bias, which is pretty simple, that we look to those things that are most recent, that is a bit of anchoring as well, that we say, well, look, this is what's been happening, and that you know, that gives me a good sense for where we are and where we're going. And again, you spoke to this earlier about people looking for patterns. So I you know, I can see that being something that, you know, is natural for people to think about.
Yeah, you know, it's really tempting to just look at the recent past and assume that that's what's going to happen in the future. This is, looking, you know, just in the past couple of days, there have been some down days in the stock market. And it's tempting for, you see this in the media already of is this indicative of what's going to happen in 2015?
Exactly.
We're talking about 3 days of data, and people are already extrapolating that to the rest of the year.
I know.
And that's tempting, and it's also tempting over longer periods. So you saw, you know, in 2009, after we just had a really bad year in the stock market, that just gets extrapolated through the future. Or 1999, you've had 10 great years in the stock market, and that gets extrapolated, and you see forecasts of Dow 36,000 and whatnot.
Yeah.
It's always very tempting. This is true for, I think, most things in life, not just investing, that people look at what just happened and assume that it's going to be a guide to what's going to happen in the future.
Well, and there's also the opportunists that do this. You know, you have, and I watch this because, you know, I use on social media, I pay attention to LinkedIn and other things like that. And it's obvious, you know, if you just follow it and pay attention, you know, for example, when, you know, the person that all they do is sell insurance or annuity product, that's all they do. And I know that about them because I know who they are. They only will report the bad days in the market on their posts. They always skip, you know, the 300-point gain. They'll only talk about the crash of the 300-point the day before. And so
Sure. That
compounds what you're talking about, which is, you know, people naturally looking at the most recent period. And of course, I could spend a whole show talking about what the folks that are pushing and shoving as hard as they can on gold that they've been, you know, talking about the world falling apart for, you know, a long time now, and it's going to happen. It just hasn't quite happened quite yet, and they got gold for you to buy to make sure that you're in a good place for that.
Of course, and you know it's hard to be too cynical in this business, I think, and there are a lot of people out there trying to pushing their views and what they believe. It really comes down to everyone in this business is, you know, has their own self interest in mind. Basically, no matter what you're doing, you have your own self-interest in mind. It's very important as an investor to understand that most opinions that are out there in the market, most articles, most are in one way or another some sort of advertisement. Even if it's from a journalist who's not selling you an investment product, his incentive is to get you to click on the article and read it. That's true for everybody. It's true for me. It's true for everybody out there. So you can never be too cynical in investing in business, I think.
The world will end today. Click here and you can read my article tomorrow.
Right, that's exactly true.
Morgan, it's great stuff. I applaud your writing. I do think it's very good stuff, and I don't think you are selling us anything. I think it's excellent. The Motley Fool and the Wall Street Journal, that's where Morgan is writing, and you can check out WSJ.com and Fool.com. Morgan, great work, and I applaud your efforts and love to have you come back, and we'll talk some more.
Thanks very much. Thanks for having me.
All right, it's our pleasure.
Today's edition of Real Money Radio has been brought to you by Holland Financial, conveniently located on Granada Boulevard in Ormond Beach. Could you benefit from a one-on-one confidential conversation with David Holland, or would you like a second opinion to make sure that you're on the right track? Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us at planstronger.com to schedule your no-obligation consultation. David looks forward to discussing the financial issues that matter most to you. The host of Real Money Radio, David Holland, is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of experience. And because David provides advice to clients on a daily basis, his hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Commentary given during this radio program should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual situation and only where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Real Money Radio is produced by Holland Productions.